Hi, great rolling. Alright, I'm speaking with Jamie Tucker from Asteroid Base, an independent game design studio, about their latest game, Lovers in the Dangerous Space-Time. Jamie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Let's start off with something about yourself. How did you get into this line of work?
It's really weird. Yeah, I guess I came into it just because it's from the community in Toronto, sort of seeing what they were doing at the time. I was in a completely different sort of career path where I had training as an illustrator, and then I was working in graphic design and doing some freelance illustration. But I wasn't enjoying it terribly whole lot, because when you start doing something for long enough, you realize it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just saw like what was going on in Toronto. I was living in Calgary at the time, and I used to live in Toronto, and then I moved back, and I was just like, there's people making games, which I never really realized, like, you could do, right? Never something, like, in 2008, you know, it was never really possible before that, unless you were, like, really good at programming, I guess. But, so I just started learning programming around that time, and just doing games with friends, and then that's sort of how I got started.
All right. So you didn't have any kind of formal education in this? You didn't go to classes? All something you just picked up?
Yeah, like there's lots of free courses. So I took MIT has like OpenCourseWare,
mm-hmm.
and I guess Stanford has a lot of new stuff now as well. But like, yeah, just taking like computer science classes online, like they're all free, and kind of get this really cool basic education with programming, and then just the rest has been teaching myself like C# and Unity and that. But I come from like an art background, so I kind of had the pipeline for creating assets, but it was just the programming stuff.
Well, can I ask you about your inspiration, the kind of things that kind of got you both into art and perhaps you can bring into the games that you work with?
For like art, it was mostly like comics and animation. That was kind of what I was into, and then some like really beautiful games that's always like struck my like Katamari Damacy and like Shadow of the Colossus.
Good ones.
Like those, you know, those kind of, they make you, like, I don't know, they make you want to do that just because they're so striking. So, yeah.
Hi. Were you a big gamer even now or as a kid?
I was, I grew up, like, I had, like, a Nintendo. My brother bought a Nintendo when he was, like, a teenager. So I grew up with that. And then I had a Sega Genesis, but I always had like the one game that my parents bought me, so I never got to play very many games at home because they were always just like the one board game I got bored of, because we never like owned a lot of games. So I'd always go to my friend's house, and so I grew up like playing games at other people's house most of the time. And then even like growing up, or when I was old enough, like I had like a PlayStation 2 for a bit until it broke, and then I've missed whole generations of video game systems because I've never could afford them, even like after college. So it was always just like my playing games was always at someone else's house. I like playing certain kind of games, I guess, from that, just like games that you could play with them. So I guess that's why really like co-op, like local games, or like Smash Brothers or GoldenEye, like, because those are the games that I was always playing at other people's houses.
Well, that's great, because it segues right into the game you're working on now, Lovers in the Dangerous Space-Time, because one of the things that intrigued me the most when I first saw the game was this co-op feature.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the game.
Yeah, like, that was probably the first thing that we decided on before we even had a game, was that we were making a co-op game. Just because that was kind of the play style that we wanted to try out. And when we started it, it was the beginning of 2012. We started it was during a game jam that we started it. And it was we had seen some of our friends made some co-op games, and we were just like, we thought that would be really interesting kind of play that would be different. So that's what we wanted to go for. So yeah, we went through different, after that, yeah, just different ideas of what kind of games to make. And we kind of settled on this idea, it's kind of inspired by the game Artemis, where you're on a bridge. That's kind of a Star Trek bridge simulator game.
Yes, I've heard of it.
So we wanted to, get that sort of experience, but in a controller-based world. So instead of having your own laptop, then your controller is controlling the character, and then that's how you interact with things on the ship. So we just we had this that idea, and then kind of thought of Star Wars, where Luke and Han are running around the Millennium Falcon, and they go and they shoot TIE fighters and that. That was kind of, it was all over a couple beers or something, drawing in sketchbooks one evening. That's kind of how quickly the game idea came together. And it was just because we wanted to make a co-op game.
Great, but there is a single player mode.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that you can make a prototype of a game super quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the game takes 3 years. And along that line is where you start thinking about how to expand the reach of the game. So the one player version was a part of that. So it's because not everyone is available at all times to play games cooperatively. So we wanted to make a co-op partner in the AI. So it's like a little dog that runs around the ship with you, and you tell him what to do, and then he'll take care of everything for you.
Cool. For people who might just be listening to the podcast before they look at anything else, so if you describe the game a little more. So you're in this pink, circular, Death Star-looking ship, flying around. What are you doing out in space?
You are... I don't know, you're just trying to get by in the universe, I guess. We have it so you're flying around and rescuing different animals, and then you're being attacked at all times by all these other stuff, and you gotta run around to the different stations to be able to manage all the different threats. So and while flying the ship or using shields and shooting turrets, you have to do all that sort of within the ship. You have to run around, and then outside is this universe that you can explore and save animals and that.
This sounds like the kind of game that you will inspire arguments with your friends over. Is that kind of what you're looking for? Like kind of an actual, I wouldn't say competitiveness, but make a friend.
Yes.
I guess.
Yeah, that was the kind of dynamic that we wanted to sort of foster, was this, the best kind of co-op is when you're talking to the person beside you. So it's the whole complexity of the game is that we try to make the inside sort of simpler to move around and to sort of understand what's going on inside the ship, because outside is really complex. So there's only a few buttons that you need to use on the controller, and it's to get communication, because you can only ever see, if you're watching two people play, it's different, because there's all this, looks all crazy stuff going on, but when you're playing it, you're very focused on what you're doing, and sometimes you might not even notice what the other person's doing or what's going on the other side of the screen, because you're only looking, if you're at a turret, you're only looking at what's in front of you. So there's definitely a need for communication, and that's kind of that was kind of part of the design process at the beginning, was making the game so that you would have to communicate.
Do you see this as something that maybe it's going to be bigger in games as we get more connected with the internet, with mobile devices everywhere, that games will have this option, at least, to be able to just connect with anyone and this kind of conversation go on, be part of games?
You mean remotely, or, like...
Yeah, even remotely, as I can understand, like, not everyone is, like, right now connected in order to have this kind of communication, but it looks like we're moving toward in that direction. So, do you see that happening?
It's definitely good if it's, like, if it's someone you know. There's, like, unfortunately, there's games that, like, if it had voice chat, like, it just ruins the game because you just have someone, like... You know, so if someone you don't know, they like the anonymous sort of thing behind it. People can sort of say mean things over the internet while they're playing games. But yeah, it's like it's good. Like I have two friends that they live far away from each other, but they play Battlefield 4 together and they put a Skype call, and that's how they like. That's instead of talking on the phone, that's how they like interact with each other now. So yeah, it's definitely something that's could never happen before.
Yeah, I do see your point though. I hadn't really considered that. Yes, connecting with some random individual, you might get less than or you might get some colorful language involved.
Yeah,
with friends, it's more of that friendly rivalry you have with friends. I
mm-hmm. see that. I think Hearthstone. I think like they took out chat, I believe, because it was kind of antithetical to the game, like it's yeah, because it's, you know, sometimes you just want to relax, I don't know, but not having someone always chirping at you.
Yeah, but I see how this game gives you that option to play with friends, where you're kind of expecting, and I guess can take the kind of abuse your friends throw out at you.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not hateful abuse. It's it's right. Like, there's always love behind it, I guess, when you're arguing with someone that you care about and playing a game with.
But speaking of the people who play the game, how do things like fan feedback or player feedback work into your development cycle?
We got a lot of that because we've done a lot of shows now. We do 4 or 5 a year, I think, and we've been doing the game for 2 years now. So we've gotten a lot of feedback, and we've actually, it really helped us see who was the most excited about this game, and it's starting to, like, we are starting to develop around that. It's the fact that, like, so many people have come up to us and be like, this is, like, the game that they've been waiting to play with their, you know, their wife or their husband or their girlfriend or boyfriend. Like, so many people have come up and told us that, and showing it at events like PAX, we've had lineups of just couples waiting to play the game. So it's just like you really see who's interested in the game, and I think it's the co-op element, and I think it's the look that we've created where it's not off-putting, you know, to people.
Yeah, you could have gone, I guess, more of a darker, you know, like, you know, space Star Wars thing. But it's a very colorful game. So were you going for accessibility for that? It's kind of putting this game.
I don't know if we can say that from the first thought we had was to be accessibility, but it's kind of turned out that way, and I think it's really helping us to sort of find our audience. Because it's a game that you want to show to your friends, because you're not, like, it doesn't have some weird, gross violence or like, anything excessive that some people might be turned off of. So, it just happened that way, I guess. But I think it also did help, because that's what we're interested in. We're interested in that sort of look that's, I don't know, from our influences, I guess, like, cartoony and fun, but then there's like a little bit more depth to it, I guess. It's not cute for just being cute, I guess, but I think we were talking about the people there. Yeah, I guess from the feedback we've gotten, yeah, kind of who our audience is, and so we're definitely like making the game around that. Now, just kind of knowing that, like, a lot of the game, like, we want to make it harder because didn't want it to be too easy for, because it seems like a lot of, like, core gamers are going to be playing it, but they're going to be playing it with someone who's maybe not as core of a gamer, so it's right. Something they want to introduce to them, so we're working the difficulty around that. Now that we've kind of established that that's going to be a big part of the audience that's playing the game.
I understand. You mentioned earlier when we first started talking that back around 2008-2006 you hadn't thought that this could be actually a career that you can just go and make games. What do you see as the role of games like this kind of social game in society, just games in general as we move, again, towards this world that seems to be really connected with the internet? I mean, you feel like you have any kind of responsibility as a game designer to do something, or is it something just for fun? What's the state of games you see maybe in the next 10 years?
Well, yeah. I think the reason why every game designer out there is a game designer or game developer is because they played a game as a kid, right? That like really changed their life, and then that's why they want to become a game developer, game designer. Same with like, So I think we kind of have a responsibility to make those games that inspire like the next generation to, because like I don't think people playing Call of Duty, like if a 10-year-old is playing Call of Duty, it's not, I don't think it's inspiring him to become a game developer. Because it's, you know, there's nothing really that captures the imagination in that game. Matt Hamill and Adam Winkles also on the team with me, like, they also feel strongly about this, but that's kind of, yeah, it's like, I want to make games and experiences that are inspiring to people and makes them want to, like, get into it as well, because, yeah, that's the kind of greatest compliment you could ever get from somebody, is if you inspire them. So Matt Hamill, he made a game called Gesundheit, and he had this young boy in Singapore, like eight or nine, I think, years old. He sent him, like, in the mail, like, a whole bunch of levels that he was designing for his game, Gesundheit, that he released on iOS. And it's kind of that, and he had like a children's, he Matt like made all the music himself for the game, and then he had like a children's choir or children's band at some school, like they played the songs in their band, and it's just those kind of things that really I find really great. So we want to make the games that sort of inspire that kind of like creative output from people.
Well, that's fantastic. I really appreciate your time. I don't want to take too much time out of your work day, I'm sure, but to finish off, Lovers in the Dangerous Space Time, it's going to be available for PC and Mac.
Yep.
Release dates?
Don't know. Yeah, we're very, very we have a lot of work to do on it still, so we don't have any dates right now. And it's also a good chance that it'll be coming to consoles as well.
What about mobile devices? Something like, you think it would work on something like an iPad?
We've talked about it, but we're not sure. It would be a different game, and I don't know if it would be as the social experience that it is now if we had it on tablet, like if you could only play it as one person. I don't know.
Understood. Well, I hope for the best success of the game. I'm really looking forward to playing it myself, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Bye.